The First 50 Years, by Maurice Connor, May 1964, reproduced. The period 1913-1914 marked the dawn of a new era for the blind of Trinidad and Tobago, for it was at the time that Mr. James Augustus Alves came to this territory and decided to do something for the general improvement for our blind folk here. His training at the Royal Normal College in England made him an excellent candidate for such an undertaking, and his spirit of zeal and true dedication to the work soon won him many friends and the help of very influential people, among whom may be mentioned the Catholic Archbishop Dowling and the governor of the time, Sir George Leigh Hunt. In fact, it was the governor himself who requested the Legislative Council to make a grant of £100 towards the commencement of the work. Soon after his arrival, Mr. Alves asked for and was given a list of known blind persons in the territory. His list contained some 500 names. Armed with this information, Mr. Alves began an intensive campaign of field work, trying to make personal contact with as many as he could in order to persuade them to attend classes at the new institute. This was by no means an easy task, Mr. Alves recalls, for many people were fearful and suspicious of the idea, while others were openly uninterested. One parent even went so far as to hide a blind child when Mr. Alves visited the home. Mr. Alves' findings were sufficient, however, to indicate the need for such work and to cause more definite steps towards a beginning to be taken. The undertaking was put into the hands of the Board of Industrial Training, under whose supervision it remained for a number of years. A special committee was formed for this purpose, and after the preliminary details had been completed and a building rented, the Institute opened its doors on May 18, 1914. Work was begun at 43 Edward Street, not far from the present headquarters of the Trinidad and Tobago Blind Welfare Association at 118 Duke Street. There were only 4 students in those very early days, but the number increased steadily. The 2 teachers were Mr. Alves and his assistant, Miss Christabel Saunston, who had been a teacher before she lost her sight. Miss Saunston had adjusted so well to her handicap that she was able to guide the full benefit of her teaching ability to the ladies and young children for many years until her death in 1935. The use of Braille and handicraft were the only subjects on the curriculum in those days. Reading and writing were taught for 2 hours in the morning, while 2 hours were given over to handicraft in the afternoon, with Miss Saunston teaching sewing to the ladies and another instructor teaching basketry to the men. Mr. Alves spent the afternoon periods at the House of Refuge, where he taught Braille reading and writing to a number of inmates. The pattern of administration established then was followed pretty closely until the 1940s. A matron was appointed, and she was responsible to the board for the smooth and efficient running of the institute. Under her were the teachers and a porter, and in later years, 2 nursemaids and a cook. In addition to government grants, funds were raised through appeal circulars to friendly societies, voluntary subscriptions lists, and the holding of some social functions. As the number of attendees increased and the work expanded, the committee had to consider moving to a newer and bigger building. About 2 years after the commencement of operations, they purchased the building at 118 Duke Street from Mr. J. F. Race. Here it was that the resident school for children began to develop. Children from Trinidad were cared for free of charge, while any child from the other islands was paid for by arrangement with the board. Mr. Alves, watching the increase in the number of children, exercised his initiative and expanded the curriculum to include such subjects as arithmetic, history, geography, some music, and a little later on, elementary typing. The children remained at the school until the age of 18 and received a fairly satisfactory elementary education. At 18, most of the young girls moved over to the St. Mary's Home, which is run by the Coterie of Social Workers, while most of the young men took up residence at the Saunston Memorial Home, named after the late Miss Christabel Saunston, whose brainchild it was. From these homes, the young people continued to attend the institute and were known as day students. Their main occupation then was handicraft, either basketry or chair caning. No attempt was made to help those who might have benefited from further academic training. Some of the young men are to be highly commended for taking correspondence courses in an effort to help themselves, but it was only those blessed with an abundance of musical talent who were able to make a name for themselves in the sighted community. The late Joe Pertiu is an outstanding example of this type. He was not only a very good pianist, but also an all-round student. One wonders how far he might have gone had he been given the opportunity of receiving further training at a conservatory or university abroad. There were very few organized attempts to provide any social or cultural activities for the young people who had just left school. In this respect, however, great tribute must be paid to the founders of the Optimist Club, who made some most valiant efforts in the right direction. The founder was the late Miss Christabel Zornston and the first president was Mr. James Alves. Thus, with minor variations, the pattern of administration and training continued until the mid-1940s when the wind of change began to blow. It was then that the Canadian National Institute for the Blind was invited to send a representative who would make a survey of existing conditions and submit recommendations. Colonel Baker, then managing director of the CNIB, came down in 1946, made a survey and submitted a report. This is not the place to examine such a report in detail. It is sufficient to note that the report was accepted in principle and that about 18 months later, Mr. D.B. Lawley, then CNIB's national field consultant, came to Trinidad. Under his guidance, the entire structure was reorganized. Work for the blind was moved from the Board of Industrial Training and put into the hands of a newly formed body, the Trinidad and Tobago Blind Welfare Association. Sweeping administrative changes followed. A new school for blind children was built at Santa Cruz and opened in January 1952, thereby bringing about the separation of children and adults. The building at 118 Duke Street took on a more business-like atmosphere. It became the headquarters of the association, housing owner's offices and the workshops. Two other centers have been established, one at San Fernando and the other at Tobago, providing work for a larger number of blind people. A general secretary has become the chief executive officer and he is responsible to the association for the smooth and efficient functioning of the workshops and, to some extent, the school. In addition to CNIB, we have also received much help and advice from the Royal Commonwealth Society for the Blind. Their representatives have done great work, making surveys round the islands of the Eastern Caribbean, helping with the extension of the crafts at the workshops and giving invaluable assistance to the teaching staff of the new school. The education system has also come in for a complete overhauling. The progress of the children from the kindergarten stage right through to fifth or sixth standard is now more systematic. More teachers are seconded from regular teaching service and efforts are being made to provide in-services training so that all teachers could eventually qualify for the certificate from the College of Teachers of the Blind in England. It is also interesting to note that more children from the other islands and from British Guiana are attending the school. Children from Trinidad and Tobago are still looked after free of charge, while those from other islands are paid for by their governments. Thus far, two students have been sent abroad for specialized training. One from Trinidad has returned and is working as a stenographer at Barclays Bank DCO. Thea from Antigua is taking a stenographer's course at the Royal Normal College with a view to returning to his home island and working there. Readers will observe that I have refrained from mentioning names of many persons engaged in this great work. Such a list would fill an entire book and mere words could never express the sincere thanks and deep gratitude we feel towards those who have done, and are still doing, great work for us. It is only with their help that we can weather the storms that beset associations such as ours. And what of the future? What will the people who were alive 50 years from now think and write? The course of a ship depends upon the man at the helm. So too, to a very great extent, is the future affected by the policies and decisions of the present. A great deal more can be accomplished in this work through a careful study of the problems and the needs of those for whom we labor. This is true even more so in the field of education, where we have a regional as well as a territorial responsibility. About Maurice Connor, see page 85.